Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there, Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds and leaky black. The Eye on College Basketball podcast is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent, and don't forget to also subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel while you're here. Let's get into it. We will eventually get to tonight's biggest game, which is number 4 UConn at number 5 Kansas. And I'll definitely get Norlander's thoughts on his first trip to Bud Walton Arena, where Arkansas upset Duke a couple of nights ago. But I want to start with some news connected to a couple of high-profile college freshmen. One of them is Bronny James, the other, Mikey Williams. Let's start with Bronny James. He's been medically cleared, Norlander, to resume basketball activities, which is obviously great news for LeBron, for Bronny, and the entire family. This, of course, comes after he, earlier this calendar year, suffered a cardiac arrest. How big of a deal is this for USC? It's obviously great for Bronny and the family.
Okay, so it's very good. The timing isn't surprising because LeBron previously said that Bronny had his last major testing and checkup this he had to go through at the end of November. So I was anticipating this would happen at some point at the end of this week or the start of next week. We'd at least hopefully get an update, and thankfully we did get an update. Bronny had actually gone through pregame warm-up stuff, just general like layup line stuff, nothing major, with USC, which was another strong indication that we were headed the right way. The question is, how soon will he play? It will be as soon as he is comfortable and the coaching staff is comfortable with allowing that to happen. But as coincidence would have it, we actually have recent precedents with this situation. Obviously, Vince Iwuchukwu, the USC big man who's still on the roster, his exact ailments were not identical to Bronny James, but he did get sidelined because of a heart failure and missed part of last season. When he was determined or publicly announced to be cleared and good to go, it was all but a few days between that and his actual debut in a USC uniform. There's a possibility that this could actually be really, really quick. I mean, he's been cleared to go, and it's just a matter of if the conditioning is there and when he can and when Bronny James can participate. Now, the game that he winds up actually doing it, the calculus will change a little bit for USC in terms of the Trojans have received plenty of pub. They've been a little bit of a letdown so far this season. They're 5-2, not a huge one, but just a little one. You know, they dropped the home game to Irvine a few weeks back, and then they couldn't pull out a tight one over Thanksgiving weekend against Oklahoma in that MTE. They play, and we'll get this later in the show, they play on Saturday against Gonzaga, and that game was organized in no small part because it's in Vegas. I mean, it was supposed to be Bronny James on a good USC team going up against Gonzaga, two projected, you know, extremely relevant West Coast powers for this 23-24 season. I guess we'll wait and see. After this, there's an 8-day break for USC. It's next game because of finals. Doesn't happen until Sunday, December 10th against Long Beach State. And then there's another week after that they'll wait until they play at Auburn. So, I'm not a doctor. Obviously, Parrish is. I'll leave that to him. In light of this announcement and seeing what happened with Iwuchukwu last last season, but literally earlier this year. That happened in January. I mean, if he's good to go, I'm hoping to see him against Gonzaga, GP, but it's a quick turnaround. I just don't know the conditioning. You would think that maybe Long Beach State might be as long as we have to wait, but it is LeBron James' son, different factors altogether. What are your thoughts and expectations here moving forward?
I don't think he even tries to play against Gonzaga. My understanding is that he'll watch this weekend. Mm-hmm. And then I would think they'll use that pretty lengthy stretch of days between the Gonzaga game and the Long Beach State game to ramp up. And then I guess I would expect to see him then on December 10th at home against Long Beach State. And looking at the Lakers' schedule, they would be off that day. And that's notable because LeBron James has said if Bronny's first game is on the same day as a Lakers game, he will skip the Lakers game to watch his son's first game at USC in person, which I guess is kind of a minor controversy. How do you feel about that? LeBron James skipping a game to go watch his son play basketball.
Lakers are going to survive. I actually love the move. LeBron haters are going to be out in full force, claiming it's a look at me move. Whatever, man. Your son's about to make his college debut, and he collapsed and had to be rushed to the hospital because of a heart issue earlier this summer. Doctors say he's good to go. LeBron James can miss three straight weeks of Lakers games to watch Bronny play for all I care. So I look forward to seeing him on the sideline whenever that winds up being.
Yeah, I think a different version of me, a younger version of me, would have probably been like, you're paid to play basketball. You should go play basketball. All 82 count. This could cost you in the standings, blah, blah, blah. As a father, I find it difficult to criticize somebody for trying to be a good father. I'm just not going to, you know, like, I think LeBron's quote was family over everything. And I find it hard to argue with somebody who says, you know what, I just want to be there for my son. Like, I'm not going to question that. You run into these sometimes in sports where a expected father will miss a game because they want to be there for the birth of their child. And that'll turn into a thing on talk radio where people are like, should you really? And it's like, yo, like, what are we arguing about? Somebody's trying to do what most of us would consider to be the right thing. Somebody's trying to do it. And now they're getting criticized for it. So yeah, if LeBron wants to be there for Bronny's first game, whenever that is, fine with me. You touched on USC as a slight disappointment. 5-2 right now. Opened with that nice victory over Kansas State, but Kansas State is now outside of the top 40 at KenPom. So USC still has zero top 40 KenPom wins with losses to Oklahoma and UC Irvine. They started 21st at KenPom, now down to 31st, 33rd at Torvik as of this moment, if you remove preseason bias. So, a slight disappointment, nothing alarming there. You know, they have played the first seven games and presumably will play the first eight at least without not their most heralded freshman. That's Isaiah Collier, but one of their most heralded freshmen, and that would have been Bronny James. I guess my question is, I don't doubt that he'll help eventually. I am skeptical that he'll help immediately because my experience in this sport is when freshmen, unless they're just unbelievably physically overwhelming, talented, like you could drop them in at any point and they'd be ready to go. When you miss this much time, it becomes difficult to catch up. It doesn't mean that he won't play an important role at some point, but he's missed a significant amount of time of not just conditioning, but like actual practice stuff that is very important for first-year college basketball players. And that's why I would imagine it'll be a slow build to wherever this is going. Andy Enfield and that staff, they're going to have to build toward it over several weeks and maybe even, you know, a month or so.
Yeah. We'll have to see how that is. I mean, this is now that he's been cleared, it's developed into a wait and see story and one of intrigue in terms of when he debuts and then how impactful and effective he is, the minutes he plays. I'll just remind our viewers and our listeners that Bronny James, was expected to be, I think, the absolute best case scenario for Bronny James going into the season, even if he had never had the heart issue, was that he would be the third best player on the roster, clearly behind Isaiah Collier and Boogie Ellis. But in reality, when you look at how valuable Kobe Johnson is as a two-way player, DJ Rodman has had some good moments there. And even if, you know, between Josh Morgan and Vince Wichukwu, like, Bronny James just might wind up being, you know, a key piece as a role player. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But just keep that in mind. Yes, we're leading the show with it on a Friday going into the weekend because the news did come out on Thursday night. And this will be a highly anticipated debut. But if he can step in and do a lot of the little things right, he can be the guy. He can be a piece, I frankly believe this, that that can help USC to top two status in the Pac-12, right behind Arizona. But we'll wait and see on it. And just glad that he's been able to be cleared and return and playing college basketball. 3 months ago. 2 months ago, that was very, very much in question. And now it's tremendous to see that the family released a statement and he is good to go and can't wait to see whenever his debut is.
So that was one big story connected to a high profile freshman. We did get another one on Thursday because Mikey Williams reached a plea agreement in his felony gun case. The Herald prospect pleaded guilty to one count of making criminal threats after previously being charged with 9 felonies. According to the agreement that's been reached with the San Diego County District Attorney's Office, Mikey Williams is going to have to attend behavioral therapy, gun safety classes, anger management classes, and complete 80 hours of community service. And if he does all of that before his sentencing date, which is now set for August 12th, 2024, this felony charge will be reduced to a misdemeanor, meaning Mikey Williams could avoid being a convicted felon and everything that goes hand in hand with that, as long as he spends the next 9 months doing what he's been told to do. So now what? Obviously, he is signed and actually enrolled as a student at the University of Memphis right now, taking online classes from California. The question people are asking around the Memphis program is, does this clear Mikey Williams to play for the Tigers this season, or next season, or ever? How do you think Memphis should handle this?
Well, this is, when you consider all the facts of the case as they stand right now, but also what you've previously harped on plenty, GP, I think Memphis should not disregard what did still happen. The most important action of all, and that is firing a gun into a car filled with people, and not give, not play it so lightly. I still think that, you know, Mikey Williams isn't draped in glory here, even if the case for him personally is heading toward a resolution here that is a lot better than it looked for a long, long time. You were someone that said that you wouldn't have Williams ever play for Memphis. Is that where you're still at as of this moment? And obviously, this is going to be something that you dive into heavy on your, I would think, on your show in Memphis later on today. Where do you stand now that we have this latest update?
I am happy, I guess, for Mikey Williams in the sense that anytime you are charged with 9 felonies and you can reach an agreement that will possibly leave you eventually with 0 felonies on your record and no jail time. That's a good development for you. So good for Mikey Williams, I guess. It doesn't change the fact that he has been credibly accused of firing a gun into a car filled with 6 people and the bullet hit the car. It only didn't hit somebody because he got lucky. It only didn't kill somebody because he got lucky. And the testimony is that there was a disagreement / altercation / incident inside the home. These people then went outside the home. Mikey Williams had told them at some point, according to the testimony, you better get to stepping or you'll leave with bullet holes. And then, according to the testimony, as the car was driving away, it was struck by a bullet that multiple witnesses have said came from a gun that Mikey Williams shot. Simply put, I don't think any self-respecting university should have somebody who has been credibly accused of firing a gun into a car filled with six people. I don't think any self-respecting university should let that person represent them. Memphis would, it would be embarrassing if they allowed Mikey Williams to play under these circumstances. And it's why my opinion on this hasn't changed at all. Keep in mind, Mikey Williams still to this day has never said he didn't fire that gun, at least not publicly for the record. His attorney, to my knowledge, has never said Mikey Williams didn't fire that gun. Penny Hardaway, to my knowledge, has never said Mikey Williams didn't fire that gun. So I'm assuming that he did. And given that Memphis is one of the cities in this country most devastated by gun violence, it would be shameful to bring in to this city somebody who currently has a felony gun charge still on the record for doing what it is Mikey Williams allegedly did. They should move on. He should never play for Memphis.
All right. Well, we'll see if that winds up actually being well, real quick, and then we can move on. Do you think that winds up? Does it go this way, or does he play for Memphis? If you had to predict.
I don't think he ever plays for Memphis. Okay. I don't know why Memphis hasn't already cut ties. I would have a while ago, because as long as he is still technically a Memphis Tiger, every headline connected to this is Memphis Tiger freshman Mikey Williams, guns, 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 guns. I don't have to remind you, the NBA franchise in Memphis is dealing with a gun issue. And the city at large is, again, devastated, just ripped apart by gun violence. This ain't something else Memphis needs. And so I'm hopeful that the people in a position of power to make these types of decisions on that campus are smart enough to realize that Mikey Williams is a talented basketball player, but sometimes that can't be the most important thing. Kansas earlier this year dismissed from its program a former McDonald's All-American who was charged with a very serious crime. Memphis now has a, you know, top 50 recruit who has been convicted of a very serious crime. If Kansas can move on from Artorio Morris, Memphis should move on from Mikey Williams. And I suspect that Memphis will. A couple of nights ago, Matt Norlander was inside Bud Walton Arena for Arkansas's upset of Duke. Amazing scene in Fayetteville. We'll get his thoughts on it next. But first, a word from our partners.
What if I told you imaginary friends are real?
This is just so exciting.
Now, get ready for the movie event with the greatest cast you've ever imagined.
Showtime.
Ryan Reynolds, John Krasinski, Kaylee Fleming, Fiona Shaw, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Louis Gossett Jr., Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, George Clooney, Maya Rudolph, Bradley Cooper, Sebastian Maniscalco, John Stewart, Sam Rockwell, Awkwafina, Keegan-Michael Key, and Steve Carell.
I need to throw up or I need a snack. It's one of the two.
Gross.
If. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Written and directed by John Krasinski.
It was a very bright, shining light,
Sarajevo,
and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
Arkansas upset Duke on Wednesday night inside Bud Walton Arena. Deadleg was there. He's now back home. Your thoughts on your first trip to Bud Walton?
I got in and out of Fayetteville without food poisoning. When I was getting a ride, I went out to lunch and then I went back to the hotel real quick. And my Lyft driver was asking where I was going to do dinner. And then he was like, oh, this place is good. He's like, I wouldn't go. It's like, there's a couple places around here. Actually, I think I've gotten food poisoning. I was like, what is going on here? And I didn't I didn't indicate, I was on a podcast. I didn't get it. I was just like, hey, I have a buddy who came here and he said he got food poisoning. Like, so I'm thankful. After the guy was like, there's been a few spots here. Did not happen whatsoever. I want to thank, by the way, I'm going to shout him out right now. I'm going to thank Dan Shulman, who is a dedicated podcast listener. We met up for a quick bite there. And, so far as I can tell, he was also spared. Mr. Shulman says hello. And, he picked the spot, shortly before he went to call the game. Dan Shulman was incredible. One of the epic voices in the sport, of course. And so thankfully, I think we were both spared. So I at least wanted to lead on that, because after your story and then after hearing my Lyft driver, I'm like, okay, now I'm terrified. But it went off without a hitch. And what an environment. Incredible. Bud Walton Arena, first of all, is the largest crowd, 20,344, which is more than 1,000 more than the official listed capacity of the Basketball Palace of Mid-America. They came out big, they came out heavy, and they were plenty noisy.
Did you call the Hogs?
I did not call the Hogs. The boy, they call those Hogs.
They love calling Hogs.
They love calling the Hogs. I think it was, if you include the flooding of the floor at the end of the game when they did it again, I think there were 6 calling of the Hogs that evening. They kept calling them, man. And
is there a
boy from the Northeast? I was out of my element.
It's a wild deal.
But I enjoyed it, but I was out of my element.
My favorite is Dana Altman being introduced as the Arkansas coach for a minute.
Yes.
And them making him call. I never seen somebody look more uncomfortable in my life than Dana Altman trying to call Hogs. Straight, my man flew straight from Omaha to Fayetteville. It's calling Hogs, and he was like, "I gotta go back to Creighton. I can't do this. This is wild."
While I, how about this? Not gonna offend the Arkansas fans here. I understand how a person could find themselves in that moment and say, "What on earth have I done?" but man, do they love their Hogs? They love their Razorbacks, man. Nada's asking in the chat if I got to pull up from the snout. I filed from the floor in BWA, and had there been a basketball available, I was absolutely going to pull up from the snout, but there was never the proper moment. Trust me, this is my one major regret about visiting there, was not getting the chance to pull up from the snout. So that was not done. Gives me all the reason to get back to Fayetteville, whose campus, by the way, and the athletic facilities, I tweeted this out on Thursday. If you've never been there, I've never been to a campus where they had, it's a long, long, long row from the football facilities to track, basketball, softball, baseball. It goes for like 2 miles. The actual like footprint and how they carved it into Fayetteville is pretty impressive. And I thought the campus was pretty awesome. As for the game and the environment and everything itself, that was one of the 5 best environments I've ever been to. That's unquestionable. In the column I wrote late on Wednesday night, or really early Thursday morning, I described how there was a sequence of events in the second half where it was a couple of Caliph battle threes. Blocker got a transition bucket after, it might have been Brazil that forced the turnover there. But each subsequent bucket, which happened over the course in real time, I want to say it was about 5 to 6 minutes of real time, because we had a TV timeout in there too. Everyone got the building even louder, and they were going nuts. It was Shire's, and I want to get to the actual game in a second here, but I was talking to Shire before the game. He had never stepped foot in an SEC arena, period, as a human being. Forget playing in one. He had never been in one, so he was excited to actually experience this, and damn did they ever. Duke had not played, this is also in the column, Duke had not played in an SEC joint since Shaq was suited up for LSU in 92. In 92, Duke was number one then. LSU was in the top 20. Duke wound up winning that game. So it had been 30-plus years since Duke had gone on the road there. One of my favorite visuals of the night was it was a whiteout. So for the most part, Arkansas fans did a good job. You saw a little bit of that maroon-red people showing up. But a lot of people, and they didn't have T-shirts laid out. They had these huge beat Duke rally towels, so most are in white. You saw it's a little bit of dotting of blue there out there. Like it was funny. Like I'd see one guy in blue, surrounded by 150 people in white shirts. I'm like, bless you. And occasionally there was a couple. But amid all this, 8 rows up behind the Arkansas bench is one guy dressed in all black, Nolan Richardson. On the aisle, just sitting there, and I thought that was it was a great visual, in part because of COVID. He had not gone to a game at BWA since 2019, so this was his first time back. Obviously, this is the 30th anniversary season of him beating Duke in the title game, as we mentioned on Friday's show. And they of course announced him and recognized him coming out of halftime, and a loud roaring standing ovation, which was a cool moment. And then, last thing not tied to actual gameplay was, I want to say on six occasions, we had Bobby Chance or We Want Bobby Chance coming from the student section. And then sometimes those would, you know, move along to the entire arena. Bobby Petrino was on hand. He was in a luxury box, and there was no grand entrance on the motorcycle. There was no halftime introduction on the floor, which I was kind of quasi rooting for, to be honest, because I think the crowd would have lost their mind. But yeah, just an incredible scene. Really, really good building. It doesn't look old. I want to be clear on this. It doesn't look old, but how it was built, when it was built, the style in which it was built, they won't build arenas like this anymore moving forward, for a number of reasons. But I hope they never change this arena. I love the way that the lower bowl is constructed. The luxury boxes are further back, which doesn't make for amazing viewing, but man, do they fill that place up, and they make it loud, and it's big without feeling cavernous. I think I might have mentioned that on the Wednesday show. So that's I guess that's a quick recap of the experience. There was really, really awesome. Your thoughts on the actual game, GP? I'll toss it back to you.
Well, I just you know, the game's the game. Like, Duke was supposed to win, favored by 4.5 points at tip, but there's nothing embarrassing or shameful about losing inside Bud Walton to an Eric Musselman coach team in front of 20,000 people. Still, undeniably, there were some people who thought Duke should have been preseason number one, and now Duke is a two-loss team, you know, as the calendar flips to December. Any concerns about the Blue Devils, or is it as simple as, hey, they played Arizona. Arizona might be the best team in the country. And then they played at Arkansas in front of Nolan Richardson and 20,000 other people. What are you going to do?
Yeah, let's talk Duke. And then I got a couple of nuggets here on Muss and his Hogs. No big picture. Like, what do we see? What do we not see here from Duke? There are problems. Like, so Philip Askew wound up having a great game, and it kind of speaks to him. He had three at the half. TJ Power had six. Nobody had TJ Power scoring more, let alone twice as many points in the first 20 minutes of that game than Kyle Filipowski. But Tyrese Proctor has had a couple of games so far this season. His numbers overall actually reflect relatively decently well, I think, this season. But if you've watched the games and you watched him against Arizona and you saw him here against Arkansas, he has left you wanting. And sometimes, and this is the guy who, by the way, is the most, he's the most vocal guy in that locker room. And so his voice, even though he's relatively young, but I mean, you know, it's not Jeremy Roach whose voice kind of takes over the most in that huddle in that locker room, I'm told. It is Tyrese Proctor, and he played 33 minutes. He had 7 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 fouls. Wasn't quite as productive as I think they needed him to be. And some of it, of course, is Arkansas, but still, really, really good players can often overcome that. And then the young guys who are young, Shire said this afterward, they needed this. Jared McCain had 5 points. Caleb Foster was an entirely non-factor. He had 2. Yes, you know, Duke did opt to go to that press. Man, did Arkansas wilt, because it went from, I looked at the game clock. There was 3 minutes to go when some bodies started filtering down into the stands. And by that, I mean students that were elsewhere were repositioning themselves to storm the floor. And then with 2:09 to go, it got like really like they're ready to go. Like the top 4 or 5 stands in the student section were empty because everyone was cramming down low. And then all of a sudden you got a game going from, you know, a 12-point Arkansas lead to Duke getting this down to what, 4 points. I want to say it might have been Foster that missed the three from the top of the key. If that had gone in, it would have been a 1-point game with like 20 seconds to go, I want to say. It didn't fall, so we didn't get there. Credit to Duke for never really giving up. But between Proctor, Foster, and McCain, they didn't have enough there. Roach wound up with 22. Filipowski had 26 and 10. But it's a tough game in a road environment. And there's... I don't think they will face a tougher environment this season. There's not a place in the ACC that matches Bud Walton Arena, not even Carolina in the Duke game, which is a great environment, but the building is larger. You do, and Carolina, there are Carolina fans who will readily admit this. Like, it's a good environment. It doesn't match BWA. So,
like, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Dean Smith Center, Rupp Arena, whatever. They're both
I'm not going to say what, I'm not going to say whatever.
Neither one of them are like top five. They're like the biggest, like big blue blood places that you know, they are like bucket. Like, I've been to Rupp Arena. I've been to the Dean Dome. Like, they're places you want to go. I'm just saying, once you've been in them, it's like, it just feels like a big place they play basketball.
Yeah. And listen, if it's a great game, like, any crowd's going to get into it, but we're talking about with regularity over a course of a given season, what are your best reasons? I've been told previously by Duke people that it's Virginia and Virginia Tech that are the two toughest environments.
I was going to say Virginia when you were looking for a place comparable to, like, something that could match what Bud Walton was. Yeah. Virginia would have been my
opinion. Yeah, the mileage may vary. I've heard from people it's either one of those two, but neither one's going to match BWA. It's one thing when you're playing at Cameron all the time and you got all that at your back, as Duke does. It's another thing when it's right in your face, the way that it was on Wednesday night in Fayetteville. So Duke is 5-2. It had some early bumps last season because of injuries. This season's a little bit different. And John Shire's not afraid to play on the road. This was a TV mandated thing, but he's, choosing to go on the road next year in the non-con play Arizona. It's a good developmental piece, and they're still figuring it out. I did sit down with Shire a little bit. I'll have some more stuff on that as applicable on the site later this month, and can drop in some of that stuff too on the pod as need be. As for Arkansas, I went to practice the day before and then sat down with Muss one-on-one and the staff after the game. This was considered must win, which I appreciate the honesty after the fact and even beforehand. Arkansas knew it was staring down 4-4. It had a humongous opportunity here, and a loss doesn't end your season, but it significantly impairs your non-conference resume. And Muss even said, it's in the column, I'm going to paraphrase it because I don't have it up right now. He told me, he basically said, listen, we knew how big this game was and it had to be a must kind of win. And then I asked him to kind of go a little deeper than that. He said, listen, if we lose the game and we're 4-4 at that point, like, I'm at least questioning the confidence of my locker room and everything. We had this team, in our building. It's a really good team. Playing Duke means a lot. And who knows? But it didn't go that way. Trevin Brazil had a personal best 4 3-pointers. He was really, really, really good. He had 11 boards on top of that. But Caleb Battle showing up the way he did. There was no Tremont Mark, which was to be expected. I mean, he didn't participate in practice the day before, but after practice, when I sat down with him, he said, listen, I don't think he's going to play. But if there's one guy who will shock me literally in the 11th hour, it would be him. And he did share, and I put this in the column, that earlier in the week, like Mark went off the court with a stretcher in the battle for Atlantis, a lower back injury, and it wasn't a muscle thing. He was said it was like, it was a little bit had to do with nerves. And now it's kind of, he's got some tightness in his hip and a little bit of tenderness in his groin. So we don't know when Mark will come back because muscle said, listen, we're not chancing. Like, it's a groin. If you worsen it, then you can be out 3 times as long. But he said that Mark showed up on Monday in practice and no one knew he was going to do this, but he like showed up as if it was normal practice. And by that, he came in the way he always comes in. He got dressed. He got prepared as if he was going to, knowing he could not and would not play in practice. He was in full gear. He went, stationed in their facility GP. He went station to station to station to station. He did everything except physically participate. He was asking questions. His body language and everything about his behavior, if you walked in and you didn't know he was hurt, you would think that he was playing in the game. And Musselman said it blew him away. He said, I've never had a player do this. He did it again at the shoot around, and that really set the tone for the week for Arkansas. And Mark is, I think, is the most important presence in that locker room. Without him on the floor, he's the leading scorer. They were able to overcome it there. And I thought that was extremely impressive. You had some good moments from L. Ellis, Devo Davis, Lane Blocker, even the young guy, he showed up well. So big time win for Arkansas, and it's season to get a non-conference home win, likely a quad one win when all is said and done on Selection Sunday. Big time ups for the Hogs on a big win that, oh, by the way, helped a 7-7 split in the first year of the ACC-SEC Challenge. So a kiss your sister situation in year one of that inaugural event. But big one for Arkansas, no doubt.
So Arkansas over Duke was the biggest result of the past couple of nights, but we've had some other interesting ones, a lot of them tied to the battle for Atlantis. An Arkansas team that went 1-2 in the Bahamas beat Duke, while a Villanova team that won the battle for Atlantis lost to St. Joe's, and a North Carolina team that lost to Villanova beat Tennessee. Is it anarchy? Or is it, as my friend John Rothstein says, just college basketball? I actually think it's anarchy.
Well, you and I are.
I don't want to turn this into a public disagreement between me and Rothstein, no, but I actually believe it's anarchy.
No, it is a longstanding public disagreement between you and Rothstein, and I will side with you because this might well be anarchy. Okay, I did not see a literal second of the Nova St. Joe's game because of the flow of the day and getting ready for the archive. I did watch Carolina Tennessee a decent chunk of it from the media room with Billis before that game tipped off. So I got a sense of that. Although when I started watching, so we'll get to Tennessee UNC in just a second. I don't know how much you did or didn't watch of Nova St. Joe's, but just a quick comment on it. I think Nova is unbeaten against all non Big Five teams, but now is 0-2 this season against intra Philadelphia schools there.
With a game against Drexel coming up, be careful.
Not a Big Five team though, so I think they're okay, which has always been weird to me. There's the Big Five in Philly, and then Drexel's the sixth Division I Philadelphia-based program.
Check this though: is Drexel a part of this now?
Yeah, which is long been overdue. It's part of the intra Philly basketball series that they're doing, which is part of why Nova's playing Drexel. But it's still not formally recognized as a Big Five school, which is weird because I think it's like not even a mile away from maybe Penn.
It's a little bit the same way we treat Taiwan, I think.
Okay. I remember going to the Palestra in like 2012 for the first time, and someone telling, and I was getting like a bite right there, and someone's like, yeah, Drexel's right around the corner. I think that's accurate. Nice win for St. Joe's, which that's not a stunner in this regard. St. Joe's almost took out a really, really good Kentucky team. So perhaps finally, JP, finally we have a St. Joe's team that's actually, relatively competent and competitive here. They're 5-2. Billy Lang's kind of getting something together. It's year five for him, and they're doing okay. Nova, I mean, up and down. That win over Maryland, we'll see how that good it is. Win over Texas Tech, well, I guess we'll see how good it is. It was a neutral floor. Texas Tech got taken out 103-95 on Thursday by Butler in overtime. A score that, considering both programs, that is truly one of the more shocking scores of the entire season. Butler and Texas Tech playing to almost a combined 200 points, even with a bonus session. But Nova beat Texas Tech, and then the UNC and Memphis wins stand out big. We'll see. Nova's got Drexel, as you mentioned, and then K-State. We'll see. Maybe it's going to be that kind of season. I don't know. As for UNC-Tennessee, Tennessee made it interesting. I don't know if it made it interesting. They charged back late. I was watching a lot of that before I finally went and sat at my press seat all of maybe 5 minutes before tip there. I was kind of dipping in and out. Good sign for Carolina is this. RJ Davis was the leading scorer. He had 27. Baycott, of course, leading rebounder with 11. Elliot Cadeau, 10 assists for UNC. And doing this against, let me bring up the points per possession. Tennessee was the number one team in defensive efficiency heading into the game. To drop 100 on Tennessee is outrageous. Yeah, so the Vols scored 1.21 per sessions. Man, Carolina at 1.32, Parrish. At one
point, they were up 24. I mean, Tennessee made it close at the end, but Carolina like blew them out for much of that game.
Carolina scored 61 in the first half against Tennessee. Tennessee had not allowed any team to have more than 35 in a 20-minute session at any point this season. Carolina, 61 in the first half. UNC's offense is humming, man. They've gotten 50 or more in three of their past four games and at least one in one of the halves there. So between that, Harrison Ingram had 20. Carolina had three players with more than 20. That might be the first time since they ended K's regular season career at Cameron. They had four with 20 or more, which is the only time it's happened in program history. So that's good. Cadeau was the first freshman to get 10 assists in a game since Marcus Page did it more than 10 years ago. Really, really good signs. And I will note this, and shouts to Steve Kirshner with UNC Athletics, who's long done an amazing job there. Hubert Davis sits at 5-3 against top 10 opponents right now. So more work to do, but really outstanding start for him and his team. That's a big win for Tennessee. And I'll be quick on it. Dalton Connect having 37. Right. It was the trivia time.
Yep.
Last time a guy had 37 or more against Carolina. One of your more favorite college players of the past decade.
One of my favorite college players of the past decade.
I think you saw it in person. I was not there. I think you saw
it. Oh, Malik Monk.
Correct. Monk. Monk's dropped 47.
I was there. It was out in Las Vegas. Yes. CBS Sports Classic.
Correct. In Vegas, he had 47. So last time someone got at least 37 against Carolina was Monk back in 2016 at the CBS Sports Classic. He went down late, which I don't think Tennessee was winning either way. But now the Vols are a weird 4-3. I don't know the last time that we had a team that had to play three, and this is for AP Top 25 purposes, that played in non-conference play. So not like you get a tough stretch in league play. In non-conference play, and not, I'm being very specific on this because some of it was MTE, some of it wasn't. The last time a power conference team played three top 20 opponents in non-con play all away from home and not at a single site. That's what Tennessee has done. It had Purdue and Kansas out in Hawaii, and then it comes back, and then a week later it gets Carolina on the road. They're all respectable losses, and none of them were glaring, and I guess maybe Carolina scoring the way it was a little alarming. But yeah, UT is 4-3, and it'll play Mason next week, and then next weekend it's got a home one against Illinois that it needs to take advantage of. But you have the Vols still ranked at 4-3. I wouldn't fault you if you did because of the type of losses, but still, they did lose all three. They had their opportunities. They didn't get any of them. So if anyone wants to say, let's knock them out temporarily, I think that would be reasonable as well.
I have Tennessee at 15. I just don't, reasonable minds can disagree. I just don't punish people for losing competitive games to quality opponents on the road. I mean, I don't punish them harshly. Obviously, I did drop Tennessee from where I had Tennessee, but how many teams would have a better record than the Vols against the exact same schedule?
Not many. Not many, for sure. And that's a fair way of looking at it. That's almost a wins above bubble kind of approach on it. So that's
I don't want to harp on it too much. We can explore it at a later date. But when you really think about it, Drexel is a lot like Taiwan.
I got two more before we did the final 4-1. I don't have the audio. I don't think Nada does. We don't need the audio. But Kenny Payne said a player didn't want to play because they didn't have the right compression pants. That happened. That became another thing.
Oh, buddy.
So we are
getting started by saying, I shouldn't tell you. I probably shouldn't tell you this. And I was, after I heard him, I was like, you definitely shouldn't have said that out loud.
I think, and because Payne had another quote. I was there. It was earlier this year at Empire at MSG. He either said it because it also went viral. It was the one where he said, the quote is accurate. The context needed more, the quote needed more context. But when he talked about, who was he going up? He said he tricked me when they used zone. Woodson. He said he tricked me. Yes. But
you can't say things like, I'm getting tricked by other coaches and my players are refusing to play over tight issues, because it just highlights what is going on at Louisville.
I know. If you watch, and I was in the press conference when he said he tricked me, and when you see how he says it, you're like, okay, it makes sense in the context of it and the tone of voice. And then when you watch the video of Kenny Payne, he's kind of like, he's smiling at the reporter, because he's almost like, you're about to, all right, I want you to understand what I'm dealing with some of these players, kind of in like a lighthearted way. He's like, we didn't have his tights, which he had compression pants tights. He didn't want to play. Louisville did get the win. Louisville, hey, Kenny Payne, he's a winner. He's a winner. They're getting it done. I didn't want to at least not mention it, because it's almost an every show thing. Have you ever refused to do something on account of not having a personal sartorial requirement, GP? Like, I don't have this. I'm not going out to dinner. I don't have this. et cetera, et cetera.
Have I ever like drawn a line and said, I don't have these shoes, so I cannot leave the house? No.
Okay.
But I am very particular with the way clothes feel.
Oh yeah, we've gone over this.
And if something doesn't feel the right way, I cannot put it on. Like almost every golf shirt I have is the exact same shirt, just different colors, because I found a shirt that feels perfect to me and I can't wear anything else. So like when people are buying gifts for me, you know, they go, oh, what are we going to get Gary? Oh, well, I know he likes to play golf. I guess we'll get him a golf shirt. And if you buy me one, there is about a 99% chance that I will never wear it because I simply cannot put it on. So stuff like that is a big deal to me. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's why I asked the question. I'm all too familiar with how the clothes have to feel against your skin. So,
and mm-hmm. also things have to match. Like I go to the golf course sometimes and I'll see people and they've got on like a navy shirt and black shoes. And that bothers me.
You gotta let it go.
I can't. Like I look at them and I go,
I can tell you this. You're never suiting up for Kenny Payne's team. That's for sure. You got no chance. You got no chance.
If somebody has a hat on a golf course that doesn't match the rest of their attire, shoes are the one thing I guess you can kind of get away with. But like if your hat doesn't match your shirt in some way, I wouldn't even be able to.
Are you good with mine? So if you're watching, I'm rocking my Big Star shirt. Shouts to Memphis, by the way.
Big Star.
But I got the yellow of the Augusta National right here with the yellow and the Big Star. You good with this?
That looks good to me.
Okay.
It's a very Southern outfit.
It is. It actually is semi-unintentional, but it is a...
Let a man go to Fayetteville, Arkansas one time. Now he's...
I go to Fayetteville.
Surprised you're not in a Confederate flag.
Okay. That's enough. One more news item.
Hey, how about this? I've got that same Big Star shirt. And I was
you
wearing
won't wear it because you don't like the way it feels.
No. I do wear it because I love the way it feels. But I had to buy where I bought my Big Star shirt. Mm-hmm. You can get it for $22 normal quality or $29 with the softest quality that they have. And I pay the $29. Uh-huh. I pay the extra for the softer quality. I love the way it feels. So I'm wearing that shirt the other day and somebody goes, well, that's a, what word did they use? Well, that's a pretty arrogant shirt you have on. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, oh, GP walking around like he's a Big Star. I'm like, are you being serious right now? This is a band. I'm not walking around like I'm a Big Star. It's a band, dummy.
Oh, yes. If you're unfamiliar, by the way, kids, go find some Big Star. Good stuff. And not a deep discography. Last news item. There's going to be a John Wooden stamp available in 2024. This was announced this week by the United States Postal Service. It's a forever stamp. How much is a stamp going for these days, by the way? Got any idea?
Yeah. Maybe like 34 cents or something.
Yeah. I'm actually trivia time to the audience. Someone inform us in the chat before we get out of here. I don't know. Postal Service says that nearly 18 million stamps featuring an original portrait of Wooden will be printed. Trivia time for real. He is the second college basketball coach to be featured on an official United States postal stamp. Who was the first?
Two-year-old Tony Hinkle.
That should be the answer. Now that I think about it, it should be two-year-old Tony Hinkle. It is the man who invented the game himself, James Naismith, who went 55-60 in 9 seasons at Kansas. I will remind you, he got a stamp in 1961. Yeah, you invented the game. Imagine inventing a game and then coaching it, and people are just kicking your ass. I mean,
buddy, I would have invented something else real quick. That's the thing people don't talk about enough.
And
the guy that invented the game is not even a top 2 coach in the history of his school.
He's not a top 5 coach. He might not be a top 10 coach, although Kansas itself might be coach number 9. They haven't had many. It's a limited one. From the press release, the U.S. Postal Service's commemorative stamps are intended to celebrate the American experience and honor extraordinary and enduring contributions to American society, history, culture, or environment. Individuals and subjects are proposed by the Public and Citizens Stamp Advisory Committee. How do I get on that? Reviews, submissions, and recommendations come each year for approval by the U.S. Postmaster General. When does Mick Cronin get commemorated? Can we get on this committee? What are we doing here?
You could actually fit Mick Cronin on a stamp.
You're insulting yourself when you say that. But
I would post Mick Cronin up.
Yeah. Mick, by the way, get better. He missed UCLA barely won on Thursday night. Cronin has COVID. He didn't coach. Dylan Andrews hit a game-winning shot for UCLA with under 4 seconds remaining. UCLA beat UC Irvine 66-65. Congrats to John Wooden. The only thing I want to – I bring this up because, one, Cronin, he can't be far. If Wooden's going to be 2024, can we get Cronin on there by 25, 26 the latest? And this is our plea to anyone that works for the United States Postal Service and can impact this. I just want hashtag Nell can stay. Okay.
Well, like who
I need on the stamp. I need, you can do whatever you want with Wooden. I want hashtag Nell can stay. Have that on there. Put it on the envelope. Get it done. Out of here. Wooden, hashtag Nell can stay. Let's go.
I mean, who has more John Wooden Coach of the Year awards? Mick Cronin or John Wooden?
We already know the answer.
It's not even close. It's not even close. So yeah, we'll get there someday and I'm looking forward to it. Can we do the final four and one?
I think it's time.
All right. Let's get a word from our partners first, though.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Final Four and One is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Updated records on the season. Dead legs, 7-8.
Okay.
GP, 9-6.
Is that true?
Feels true.
Nada, can you confirm that, please? Can you turn on your mic real quick? Is that true?
Unfortunately, it is very true.
What do you mean, unfortunately? Whose side you on here?
There we go. That's what I like to hear.
My own.
Okay. Put your ones up.
Oh, no, we're not doing this again.
Put your ones up.
Told by the chat, forever stamp, 66 to 68 cents projection for 2024. I remember when a stamp was 10 cents.
68 cents for a stamp?
What are we doing here?
What are we doing here?
I know. Really, that's my situation right now. I'm that far behind.
Yeah, you're 9-6. I've got an insurmountable lead.
Tell them what game one is.
Game one, Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern. It's UConn at Kansas inside TJ Gasnola Fieldhouse.
Let's go.
Let's go. This is a good one. This is a good one. Boy, if there's anything to get your attention off SmackDown tonight, it's going to be UConn at Kansas. Jayhawks minus 2.5.
What a game this is. Big East, Big 12 battle is why this game is happening. Do I need to remind you? These are the most two recent national champions in this sport. It's the
You'll
fourth
need to
time
remind me. Met.
Kansas 3-0 all time against UConn. Most recent matchup came in 2016 in the NCAA tournament. I expect a lot of offense here. I think this game has a high percentage chance at being tremendous. And by tremendous, I mean maybe one of the three best games we've had so far this season.
You made a real mistake not going straight from Fayetteville to Lawrence.
I'm going to see UConn next couple days. Okay. There's Jay. Again, my wife, the UConn alumni, I should say. She found out I was going to see UConn in the middle of the country when she knew I was seeing UConn again.
No, you wouldn't be going to see UConn. You would be going to experience possibly the greatest non-league competition this sport will produce this season.
Arizona Duke was pretty high quality. We'll see if it can beat it. I've been to Fog Island, unfortunately. If I hadn't, I probably would have tried to arrange that. UConn is second in the country in two-point percentage, by the way. And yet it's 237 in three-point shooting so far. It's really, really, really good at rebounding so far. So that's been a big reason why it's been as good as it's been. It's the only team in the country with 14.5 points or more coming from five guys on this roster. UConn is putting up buckets in a big way. Meantime, Kansas leads the nation in assists per game. They're getting 24 dimes per night, and they're second in overall field goal percentage, 54% from the field. And their defense has been pretty solid as well. Seven steals, five blocks per night. Dickinson, 21.7 points per game. He leads the country in rebounding, 12.7 boards. Kevin McCullough, 18 per night. Dewan Harris, by the way, 7.4 assists per game. That's fifth in the country. This is an outstanding matchup. UConn's won 24 straight non-conference games against teams in the non-conference, of course. That's how that works, but they're all by double digits. This is a humongous ass to beat Kansas by 10 or more points. In Fog Allen, coaches like to say, you go walk in down 50-0 in this building. I'm going to go Kansas in this one. I hope it's amazing. I think it's got a really good shot at being a terrific watch. Build your Friday night around Kansas, Connecticut at Kansas for the first time at Fog Allen Fieldhouse.
I spot funny business here. There's some funny business going on.
What do we got?
How's the preseason number one team only a 2.5-point favorite at home?
Because Connecticut's beaten 24 straight non-conference opponents by 10 or more points. And that average, I think if you go over the course of it, I think that averages out to something like 23 points per win. They're killing. If you're not in the Big East, you got no shot. Kansas is going to try and disprove that tonight.
Every casual in the world is going to say this. How could you not just take Kansas at home 2.5? Good Lord. Right? That's what you just did. Try to dress up like a Southerner.
I've seen what happens in that building. I got to take Kansas here.
I just feel like I need to. Everything I know about everything tells me you got to take Kansas here. But I'm going to take UConn. I'm not going to fall victim to the funny business. Can't trick me. Okay. Independent thinker, you might remember.
Yeah. You learned that from me?
I don't know where I learned it.
No, you literally, it became a thing on the show because of me.
Maybe I learned it from you. I'm taking UConn, and it goes against everything I believe in. Kansas was my preseason number one. I voted Bill Self the best coach in college basketball, and now I'm going to refuse to take them as only a 2.5-point favorite at home. It goes against everything I believe in.
You're pulling the Costanza. You're going with the opposite. I respect it.
Thank you. Game two, Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern, Colorado State at Washington inside the Tupac Grand Garden Arena.
Ooh.
Rest in peace, Pac. Colorado State -5. Undefeated Rams are up to number 11 in the top 25-1.
Okay. I might need to pump fake here. I want to say you had this as a roadie in the dock. I thought this was at Washington. This is not. This is in Vegas.
No, hey, if it's Colorado State versus Washington inside the Tupac Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas. If I didn't make that clear, consider it clear now.
I was like,
and rest in peace, Pac.
I was pulling some stuff together. I was like, CSU given 5 in Seattle? This can't be true. Colorado State, 7-0, coming off a win on Wednesday night against Colorado. That was a home win. Has 3 wins this season away from home at Northern Colorado, and then beat BC and Creighton in KC in their MTE. It's been awesome. Isaiah Stevens, I don't need to keep reminding our audience. If you listen to the show, you're familiar, but it's not just him. Joel Scott, really, really good player for them as well. Neek Clifford, get in now. That being said, I'll go with Washington here. Give me Mike Hopkins' team to step up and keep this one close. 5's a little too big, and they've got enough playmakers. Keon Brooks, Xavier Wheeler, Paul Mulcahy is now a Washington Husky after coming over from Rutgers. Number's too big. I'll go with UW.
Picking against Nico Medved, I see.
He's always been an enemy near the top of my list.
7-0. Blowout of Creighton. Victory over in-state rival Colorado for the first time since 2017. They've started 96, Colorado State did, at KenPom. I mean, no, 74th, rather, and already up to number 23. Future Mountain West Conference champions. What do you think? Rams or my Aztecs?
I'll still go SDSU as of right now, but it's a coin flip.
I'm thinking Colorado State.
And Nevada fans out there are like, what are you talking about? I see you, Nevada.
No. Nevada's strong, too.
I see it.
Fun league.
Very fun. You said two teams going to the tournament from that league at the preseason. I told you it'd be more. Restricted.
I don't remember saying
you
that.
Did. Trust me, you did.
I don't think that. I don't. Yeah. That doesn't sound like something I would say. I'm taking Colorado State. Rams are 11th in the top 25 and 1. How could I pick against them? Game 3, Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern. It's USC Gonzaga. This is the second part of a doubleheader inside Tupac Green Garden Arena. Rest in peace, Pac. Rest in peace, Big. Gonzaga minus 4.
This was the toughest on the board, and this whole setup this week. Jeez. I'll go with the Trojans here. Yeah. Again, if you missed it, this is a late tip Saturday, 10 Eastern, ESPN. It's a good one actually to kind of cap off your evening.
What a weekend of sports we got.
I'm gonna set it up for just a second, but yes, that's right. That's right. I will go. Listen, I pick USC to be better than Gonzaga in the preseason. It hasn't looked that way so far this season. I'm going to say Isaiah Collier has the best game of his year so far. Him and Boogie Ellis show up big. And the aforementioned Kobe Johnson, who is stepping into a role and thriving, just a really – he's more than this, but he's a good 3-and-D college-level kind of player, good on the wing. Really shuts it down. I think that those three show up majorly and USC gets inside that number. I'll take USC straight up.
Zags.
I know. I'm you're opening a window for me here. You know?
No, this is what you call.
You're opening a window.
This is what you call foot on the throat.
It's not.
This is how you put it. It's not enough to just to take an insurmountable lead. You got to destroy people, put a foot on their throat.
Crawl inside, wait by the light of the moon. I'm coming to your window, JP.
You ever put your foot on somebody's throat?
No, I have not.
I haven't either.
I don't know if I believe you.
No, I've never put my foot on somebody's throat. But I'd like to.
Okay.
If you could put your foot on one person's throat, who would it be?
Can we just pick the games?
One person. You could put your foot on their throat.
I got no desire to put my foot on anyone's throat.
Nico Medved?
You know what? It is Nico Medved. Thank you.
Nico Medved.
Thank you for reminding me.
Why do you want to put your foot on Nico Medved's throat? He's 7-0.
He'll take the Zags. I'll take the Trojans. What's game 4?
Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern. Creighton at Nebraska inside Pinnacle Bank, the most feared on-campus arena in the entire country.
Creighton, you're not Nebraska fan. We're not podcasting before this one's over.
Oh, I agree.
We got to see if Creighton can walk into Pinnacle Bank.
No, that's going to be tough, man.
Hey, Husker's going to get some real conversation on the Sunday show if they win this. 7-0 right now. When's the last time Nebraska started 7-0 in a season, GP?
In basketball or football?
When do we think, how about this? I don't know the answer to this, and I don't have the time to do it. The most recent Nebraska, between that, because volleyball, I'm sure, is just dominating. The most recent 7-0 start for the University of Nebraska, did it come in football or men's basketball? That I don't know. Basketball, I have the answer here.
Football? I must have been a child.
Tommy
Frazier was probably involved.
You know what happened. Nebraska, it's probably almost certainly happened since then, wouldn't you think?
I don't know. They've been bad for a while.
Well, I have 6-0. I have 6-0 starts. 7-0, it's been a hot minute. But 2008-2009, Nebraska under Doc Sadler, of course.
The great Doc Sadler.
Started 6-0. They're 7-0 now. 8-0 is rarefied air here, and they get this game. We got a couple of good intrastate rivalry games here. Getting this one with the Jays coming in. The Jays had little issue on Thursday night against Oklahoma State. They won 79-65. The Jays also lost to the aforementioned Colorado State Rams and Nico Medved. It's Pinnacle. They're going to walk in. I don't know what to tell you. They're going to get on the bus. They're going to leave the team hotel. They're going to have a nice pregame meal. Okay? And get on that bus. They're going to scoot on over. They're going to saunter off of it. And they're going to walk right into Pinnacle Bank. Jays, baby.
That's not what people do. And in a span of 10 minutes, you have picked against Dan Hurley, Nico Medved, and Pinnacle Bank. Are you trying to lose?
Other podcasts could never.
What are you doing? Dan Hurley never loses non-league games. You'll pick against him. Nico Medved is 7-0. You got your foot on his throat. Nobody wins inside Pinnacle Bank. You think Creighton's going to do it somehow, even though they just lost by 40,000 to Nico Medved.
Here is Nebraska 7-0 for the first time since 92-93. The football team is the answer to that question.
Yeah, just like I said.
They won the title in 95, but they had to have had one or two 7-0 starts in the aughts. So you're taking the Cornhuskers.
Yes. They're the home team at Pinnacle Bank. Just give me whoever
that hasn't meant much.
Hey, you pick for me. I just want whoever is the home team at Pinnacle Bank. That's who I'm. I'm not picking Nebraska as much as I'm picking Pinnacle Bank.
So we've both managed to insult the Nebraska fan base in the past 2.5 minutes. All right, good time.
Oh, I haven't. I don't.
You just picked a team based on the building it resides in and not the team itself. Yes.
That's how much I think of the building, though.
Other games to watch before we get to the N1. Houston at Xavier on Friday, 6:30 Eastern. If Houston wins this game, I think we mentioned this in the preseason. Cougars right now, number one at KenPom, 7-0. Houston wins this game. Yeah, it doesn't have a road game until January 9. It does play A&M in Houston. Not at Houston, not at its home venue at the Toyota.
Hey, remind me, who did we say would be the last team to lose a game this season? Who did we say?
I can't remember who you said. I picked... I think I'm wrong. Okay. Where am I? Here we go.
That one's on me. I was wrong.
So I had Virginia, which lost to Wisconsin, but I took Virginia thinking it would beat A&M at home, which it did on Wednesday night. And then I said it's going to get past Memphis. I'm wrong. I had Virginia. I'm going with one loss Virginia until like the first week of January. How about
that? Remind me who I had?
I have no idea. I got no idea.
Oh, I just popped into my head. It was the Houston Cougars.
Was it?
It was the Houston Cougars.
Was it, though?
Oh, yeah, it was.
I mostly believe you. Well, you know what?
I pick Houston every year to do this.
You're on track. They got to get through Xavier, who's coming off a loss at home to Houston on Monday.
What?
Keep an eye on that. So that is, yeah. Sorry, did I say Houston? I meant Oakland.
Yes. We got a back-to-back here? Doing a back-to-back.
Go ahead and dial back that 15-second thing on your pod. GP goes, what? Yeah, sorry.
For those who insist I don't listen when Norlander talks, that was evidence that I do.
Oh, man. Houston at Xavier, 6:30 Eastern, Friday night on Fox Sports 1. Keep an eye out for that one. Purdue at Northwestern on Friday. At Northwestern for your top-ranked Boilermakers. 9 Eastern on Big Ten Network. It's a pretty packed Friday. My wife wanted to watch the David Tennant Doctor Who special that's on HBO Max, and I said, listen, it's not happening Friday. We'll have to save that for Saturday. Shouts to Doctor Who. Saturday, 5-1 Memphis at 6-0 Ole Miss, 2 Eastern ESPN2. Certainly a good one to keep an eye out for. Duke plays at Georgia Tech, so coming off the Arkansas loss. That's a 2:15 Eastern tip. That might be a streaming-only situation. I don't think that's on over-the-air television. And then 2-5-1 teams on Saturday, Illinois at Rutgers, 4 Eastern on Big Ten Network. On Sunday, you've got unbeaten Clemson at Pitt, 2 Eastern ACC Network. And then Auburn plays at Appalachian State. This is a 2-for-1 deal. Shouts to Dustin Kearns for helping get this done. It was scheduled amidst all the COVID stuff. But I was texting with Dustin. He said, listen, Pearl is the only Big Six coach that'll do this. He'll play a true non-con road game. And frankly, I don't know if he's not the only one, but he's one of very few that would do a 2-for-1 with a road game against a mid-major of this level. So Auburn at App State, good on Pearl for scheduling that one. He might not be overly enthused in the moment, but he gets it done. Here is my N1. Saturday, a huge, by the way, huge college football day. conference championship games, determining who makes the college football playoff across the board. That'll get announced Sunday, by the way. Amid all of that, this is a great sports weekend for sure. Amid all of that, we've got a really nice hoops tilt. 12:30 Eastern on Fox Sunday. Saturday, excuse me. It goes down on Kirkpenny Court. It's Marquette, third ranked, -1 for KenPom at 5-2 Wisconsin. Now, here's the deal. On this college football note, this final weekend of, I guess that's not the regular season, but you get what I'm saying. You got all these great, we're coming off like all these great rivalries in college football. You know, they got these amazing names. They've got Bedlam. You got the Iron Bowl, the Civil War, the Backyard Brawl, Farmageddon, the game, right? College football has all these great ones. And I know Marquette and Wisconsin play every year. So as I saw that you didn't pick this game for the Final Four and one, I said, well, this is a no-brainer. I'm going with this one. I was like, you know what? Got these college football championship games. This has got to have a good name, right? You know what they call this thing? No, you don't. That's the whole point.
They call it
I-94 rivalry. What are we doing? This is the 130th all-time meeting between these schools. They have played every single year for almost 70 years and have played dating back a century. I'm throwing down the gauntlet. Can we just get a better name for Marquette versus Wisconsin?
Yeah, I got one. We should
Come
call
on,
it,
man.
We should call it Bedlam.
We shouldn't. That already exists. But I don't know.
But just take it.
I guess it's up for grabs.
Yeah, just take it. Just say we're Bedlam now. You know, yeah. like that movie. Like I'm the captain now. It's the same thing. We're okay. Bedlam now.
All right. Well, I was anything other than the I-94 rivalry. This series, which Wisconsin leads with, by the way,
call it the Egg Bowl.
Again, already exists and not
take
going.
It. Call it Bedlam at the Egg Bowl
or the
annual Marquette Wisconsin basketball game. Bedlam at the Egg Bowl.
Can we get some sort of dairy trophy here? I don't know. Call it
the Egg Bowl Bedlam
or Birds Badgers Bowl, Birds Badgers Ball, Milwaukee Madison Melee. Just something other than the series deserves a proper name. You've gone this thing a
Bedlam. The annual Marquette Wisconsin basketball game will forever from this date forward be called Egg Bowl Bedlam.
It's Marquette minus.
Put it on a shirt.
It's Marquette minus.
But make the shirt soft, please.
Pick
Marquette. I can't pick. Cam Jones is my little homie from Memphis. You think I'd pick against him in the Kohl Center? No chance.
It's an interesting game.
Egg Bowl Bedlam game. Always interesting.
I like them. I like the Milwaukee Madison Melee or something like that. But if you want it to be Bedlam,
Egg Bowl Bedlam.
Okay. Doesn't really roll off the tongue.
It does. You just have to practice.
If an egg rolls, it doesn't really roll off the tongue.
You have to practice. You have to put in the work. You have to put in the work, but eventually it'll sound right.
Learn this as a thing. I will go Marquette as well. We agree on that one.
Like I'm gonna tell Shaka in his post game, like after you win, please just. And now we'll get opening comments from Marquette coach Shaka Smart.
Yeah,
he says it's just a real honor to get a victory in Egg Bowl Bedlam. We know how much this game means to the state, and it's just nice to have another Egg Bowl Bedlam victory. We have won the Big East. We've won the Big East tournament. You know, I've coached in a Final Four, but I tell you something. There ain't nothing like winning an Egg Bowl Bedlam game.
I regret ever bringing it up. But we both got Marquette.
Yeah, have to. That was the Final 4-1 presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. We ready to go? I got to go talk some more. I got a lot more talking to this.
Yeah, actually, you actually got to leave your house. A tremendous young fan of the pod did find me at Bud Walton Arena, so I said give him a shout. Shouts to Storm. He and his dad came down and said
Storm?
Hello. Storm. Storm.
Dude named Storm?
Got bad news for you, too.
What?
He's like, listen, I like you a lot more than Parrish. I said, I appreciate that. You're making it worse. If you're not watching, you'll have to go check YouTube there. But no, in all sincerity, Storm, thanks for coming and saying hey. Appreciate you and everyone that came over and said hello in Fayetteville. My pleasure. Let's get out of here so you can go talk some more.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle. Legend. Shouts to Huck, Larnell, Storm, Nico Medved. Thank you guys once again for watching, listening to the Eye on College Basketball podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. More of us than there are of them. That needs to be reflected in the comments. And we're going to talk to you again on Sunday. Till then, take care.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world.
RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount Plus, and for the first time ever,
I want you to use your talent for good, for a change.
8 iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay it forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame? RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, new season now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.